There's a thousand pretty women living out there. They're all living, the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. Okay, that's the best Johnny Katz impression that I have. This is Tricia McCrone, and welcome to Katz with the Dish. And we are making Katz with the Dish history today. After, gosh, about four or so years of doing the show, this is the first time that I am going solo without my partner in crime, John Katzmatis. Katz is off on assignment, whatever that means. He's probably on a beach somewhere enjoying stuff. He's always on assignment. So he's off busy, and it's kind of like they're letting the inmate run the asylum. I swear, it's like the crazies are out because he's usually the one that tries to keep me in check. But luckily today, my guest slash co-host, I guess you could say, is not only a regular contributor to the show, but he is the film editor for the Las Vegas Weekly. He has his blog, joshbellhateseverything.com. He is the guy that I debate more with than Johnny Katz, believe it or not. And it's kind of the perfect day for John Katzmatis not to be here, because when he's here, he doesn't get a word in edgewise when the two of us get going. Welcome, my favorite guest, Josh Bell.
Oh, thank you. Such a wonderful intro. I didn't realize I was going to be the co-host, but I feel like you can probably handle it for both of us.
Well, it's just us, you know? So, I mean, it's and Katz, you know, wherever he's doing, I'm sure he would have just
he's
had that little intro.
Somewhere.
Yeah, he would have had that little intro and then forget about it. Yeah. But you also, we should say, you have the cover of the current Las Vegas Weekly, and it is all about the summer movie preview. So after the break, we're going to be talking a lot about all the blockbusters and what you think is good and what you think is going to be bad. Because you have, I mean, I've read it from cover to cover.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm very interested to talk to you about a lot of this stuff. But I watch so much stuff, as you know.
You like do. I think you watch more stuff than I do, and it's my job.
I swear. I know. I really have picked the wrong profession in life. I really should have a job like yours. But I have been obsessed with things, and I want to talk about it. No one can talk about it because nobody sees the things that I see.
Oh, I hope I've seen them. I may not have. We'll find out.
Okay. The Jinx. HBO, The Jinx.
Right, which I actually have not seen. I get a lot of HBO screeners and stuff, and for some reason, I think for the reason that it was so suspenseful and there were so many surprises in it, they didn't send out press screeners, so I haven't caught up with it yet. But I've read a lot, and obviously the story continues to develop.
It's amazing. I mean, it was like we were really, I never have seen a television series, docuseries, where actually the news was happening around it.
Right.
And when they came up with the piece of evidence with the Beverly Hills thing, for those of you who have seen it, it was like, are you kidding me? This is what they've been looking for. And it was just found by this documentary. I mean, it was so gripping. So, okay, now I'm obsessed. So please tell me that you have seen Going Clear.
Oh, yes, I have seen Going Clear.
Okay.
Yeah, the Scientology documentary on HBO. Yes.
I have watched it four times.
Wow, that's a lot.
I am so obsessed with this. What was your take on it?
I thought it was a good movie. I don't think I would watch it four times. It's a good distillation of a lot of the stuff that has been written and said about Scientology over the last several years. I think if you don't follow all those articles and books, which I don't necessarily, you can get a good sense of everything about it. And I liked when it was not as much just the facts and figures, but when it got into the personal stories of the people that they interviewed and how each of them ended up having to leave the church and what they went through. And so, yeah, I thought it was a pretty effective movie.
Well, a crazy thing is that year in 1999, I was in London with my family, and there was an actor that I thought was so hot that I was on the elevator with, and he was talking to me, and of course, me being in, you know, a young thing that I was, I thought that, of course, he's hitting on me, please. And so, you know, I'm doing the little flirt with him every day, and all of a sudden, one day, he's like, what show are you going to go see? And I said, oh, my brother-in-law has never seen a Broadway show, and he's friends with the Gibbs, so I think I'm going to take him to Saturday Night Fever. And he's like, oh, John Travolta is a friend of mine. And I'm like, oh, really? We get into these conversations about four or five times now on the elevator. Finally, he says, what are you doing here? I said what I was doing. And I asked him, and he said, oh, I'm with the Church of Scientology, and I'm running seminars and blah, 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 blah. And in my brain, I said, oh my gosh, he's in that cult. You know, like I freaked out. It's that Jason guy. That is the big whistleblower.
Oh, Jason Becky.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you could have waited it out for another few more years, and then he would have been out.
He wasn't hitting on me. He was trying to recruit me. What was it? But of course, my little ego, I was like, oh, he's totally flirting with me. And then he was trying to recruit me. And sure enough, after watching the film, I did research. And he spent the summer in London doing things for the Church of Science, that exact summer that I was there.
Amazing.
But it's crazy to me that, I mean, I think I watched it so many times because I just always thought it was the space cult, you know, like I never really understood it. And I never really understood why people were so upset. I mean, everybody's got a crazy origin story.
Right. It's not even as much about their beliefs as it is about the way that they treat people yes. in their organization.
Yes. And I mean, the fact that they're getting a tax, that they're getting tax exempt, not having to pay their taxes because they basically blackmailed the IRS.
Right. Right. And I think they're trying to reopen that. But I mean, all religious organizations are tax exempt and I think take lots of advantage of that.
But this is blatant. I mean, you have your Sea Org, right. where you basically have slaves, and you yes. know when they're like, "Why isn't anybody asking? Why aren't these kids in school? Why are these kids basically building Tom Cruise's, you know, his hangar for his airplanes and stuff?"
Right. No, it is certainly egregious, and that comes across very well in the movie. I mean, I remember watching the South Park episode years ago.
It was hysterical.
Which was more about their beliefs yeah. and was more about mocking the sort of ridiculous things that they believe in, which on South Park, I mean, there was a whole episode similar to that about Mormonism, and that's kind of their perspective is all this stuff is silly. And I think if you look at it that way, you can equate these two things, but really it's what the movie gets yeah. across is about the way that they treat the people who get in the organization and believe in what they believe, and it's about how they're then taken advantage of, which is what's the real terrible thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I was just about the whole thing with Tom Cruise and splitting up Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise. I mean, all of it was so fascinating to me. But again, like the space thing, I'm like, I'm a Catholic. People could say things, oh, well, the story of Jesus, that's crazy too. You know, I mean, I believe whatever people believe is fine, but how they're getting tax exempt and basically have slaves and are putting them in the hole and how brainwashed they are, I thought was crazy. You were the only person who had been able to say, I hold this in yeah, and I talk about it with everybody.
It got a lot of press. I think a lot of people watched it on HBO. It definitely was.
All right. So now do you think it'll be a thought of during nomination time?
I mean, I'm not sure if they gave it like a qualifying theatrical run, which mm-hmm. I know HBO does with some of their films. The Kurt Cobain documentary that they have coming up this week, I know opened in a few theaters in advance. So if that is the case, then I think it could be under consideration for an Oscar. I'm not sure. I don't know if the Emmys have... I think there is a category if it's not eligible for an Oscar, there is some sort of news and informational programming mm-hmm. Emmy category, which doesn't have the same level of prestige.
Sure.
It might not even be given out on the televised Emmy program. But I think regardless of whatever it is, whatever it's eligible for, yeah, I think so. I mean, Alex Gibney, the director, has made a lot of nominated and awarded. I think he won the Oscar for Taxi to the Dark Side in 2007. Yeah. So,
and also the interviewing. Oh, I can't think of his name now. The director of Crash.
Was it? Paul Haggis.
Haggis. Yeah. I mean, it was very interesting. It was an incredible documentary. If you haven't seen it, it's fascinating, and it definitely finally answers questions that I had for years about what it really, really was. Okay, so now before we get into summer again, what have been since basically Academy Award time, the Oscar season stuff, it's kind of like you've had a few movies come out that have been pretty much hits. I think Fast and the Furious is probably one of the biggest.
Yeah, that is certainly the biggest movie of the year.
And do you think that a lot of it has to do with Paul Walker's passing? Or?
Well, some of it, but even before all that, those movies were making a ton of money. I mean, and they just keep, each one makes more and more money, becomes a bigger and bigger sensation. So I think that drove the audience a bit. But even without that, I think it would have been a huge hit. And they announced the next one, and I don't think the lack of that curiosity factor is going to hurt next movie. I think people are still going to be interested in seeing it.
Well, the fact that there's, seven? This is the seventh one, I think?
Yeah.
And were there any surprise hits that came out in the past few months?
Surprise hits? Probably that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head. I was surprised that the Paul Blart sequel actually made some money. Sadly.
I'm surprised there was a Paul Blart sequel.
Well, the first one was a surprise hit. It was a movie that no one expected, and it made a ton of money. But I just thought, after all this time, who remembers Paul Blart? Who cares to see another Paul Blart movie 6 years later? And it hasn't made as much money as the first one, but it did a lot better than I think I was expecting it to be a huge flop. And obviously, it's a terrible movie. And we get excited here in Vegas because it was all shot at the Wynn. It definitely showcases the Wynn very extensively. But yeah, it's done well, and it's done well up against Fast and Furious and some of these, you know, big overpowering movies, and yet it keeps chugging along. So that was sort of a surprise to me.
Well, what I thought was strange, we were just talking before we went on about Cinderella, is there's a new trend now to be doing live action Disney fairy tales, just like the fairy tales.
Yeah, Disney is really hot on that, I think, after the success of Maleficent, which at least had kind of a different spin on the story. But that and Alice in Wonderland with Johnny Depp and now Cinderella, they're doing Mulan, they're doing Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing a Winnie the Pooh, which I don't know how that's even going to work. Yeah. With CGI, I guess they're doing a Jungle Book version as well. I mean, there's a ton. In fact, there's a live action Little Mermaid that's not from Disney, that's just based on the original fairy tale that's also on the way as well. Wow. From Sofia Coppola.
So it's kind of a new trend. That's kind of the new it thing.
Yeah, it is. And I think, I mean, Cinderella, I thought, was really bland. It just tells the story exactly how you expect
it. The costumes are beautiful.
The costumes were nice. But
as a girl, I appreciated the, you know, the costumes.
I just feel like if you're going to tell the story again, at least do something different with it. I wasn't crazy about Maleficent, but at least they tried to have a new spin on the same story. And it doesn't seem like that's what any of these other movies are doing. Disney is looking to really tell these stories in exactly the same way. I mean, Beauty and the Beast has all down to the, you know, talking candlestick and everything. They're all going to be in this new version.
Wow.
And it just doesn't really, I just don't see the point. I mean, I know the point. The point is to make money. But from an artistic standpoint, an entertainment standpoint, it just seems pointless to me.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Well, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about what you can go find on the cover of Las Vegas Weekly right now. It is the summer movie preview with Josh Bell. We'll be right back.
Light City, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. I got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women.
Hi, this is Pen Gillette of Penatelli, listening to Cats with the Dish. Of course, I've been known to lie.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Welcome back. We are here with one of my favorite guests of all time, movie critic Josh Bell. We are talking the summer movie preview, and I guess today really is the first day of the summer movies coming out as this is airing, which is with the Avengers.
That is true. Yes. Summer now apparently starts on the 1st of May and goes through the end of August. That's
Who
how summer works
solstice?
Now.
Who needs the solstice? Who needs that summer solstice?
But yeah, I mean, Avengers is certainly the first big blockbuster release of what we think of as the summer movie season. And beyond that, we were just talking before the break about Fast and Furious, and that movie has made $1 billion already, and that's a summer movie kind of thing. And yet that came out earlier in April. So it's really a year-round thing, and we just kind of arbitrarily designate this as the summer movie season. But I'm sure Avengers will be huge. I think there's a good chance it'll surpass Fast and Furious. It's already been open in some international territories and made a ton of money, hundreds of millions of dollars outside the U.S. already. And I think everyone is excited, or not everyone is excited, but many people are excited. I've seen it, and I was excited, and I did enjoy it. I think I maybe don't have the level of enthusiasm that some fans have.
Well, because they're not reinventing the wheel.
No, they're not. But I mean, I think as far as these movies go, as far as these superhero movies go, and the Marvel movies, which are really very carefully controlled so that they all kind of follow each other and continue the story.
It is interesting how they all, you know, do flow into each other. You had Scarlett Johansson in the last Captain America movie, and it was that sort of crossover.
Yeah.
And then with Thor and Loki and all that, it is interesting. They just keep kind of going between sequels and then in Avengers and then sequels and then
right.
Avengers.
Right, and they do. And then this movie definitely plays off of things that happened in those movies, in the last Iron Man movie, in the last Captain America movie, not so much in the last Thor movie, but
I don't remember what happened in the last Thor movie. I don't remember.
Isn't
it
was that
funny?
Not a great movie. It was.
Yeah, I saw it, and I don't remember. I remember that Natalie Portman was in it, but I don't remember what happened.
Well, she's not in this one. They actually have a line explaining where she is because there's so many characters in this Marvel universe and they can't cram them all in. They try. They cram in a lot of characters
in
this movie.
Now, is Gwyneth Paltrow back?
No. She also, there's a little joke about her and Natalie Portman and where are they and what are they doing kind of thing. But no, neither of them are in this movie, but everyone else is pretty much. And I mean, that makes it a little much. There are certain plot points that are kind of shoehorned in, and there was one specific moment where I was thinking something has been cut to the bone so much that I don't entirely understand what's supposed to be happening here, and it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long, even so.
Yeah.
It's entertaining as far as those movies go. Joss Whedon, who's the writer and director of this and was the writer and director of the previous Avengers movie.
And Buffy.
Right.
Which I mean, I loved.
Buffy, Firefly's done a lot of great
Firefly,
TV stuff.
I love it.
Serenity. And he's very good at coming up with this witty banter among the team members and also giving them good character moments so that you care about how they interact and it has bearing on the story. And it's not just what can we blow up now and how many special effects can we use. So I did enjoy it. I think people will be pretty satisfied when they go see it this weekend or whenever.
I have a question. When yes. Do they answer the question or does he make an appearance, if you can say, the Bucky? From Universal Soldier.
From Winter Soldier.
He was left him there and then
I think he'll probably show up in the next Captain America movie, which is, I think, sometime next year. But no, he is another character who's not in this in this film.
Now, what are some, we have Pitch Perfect also coming out the following week. Now, I loved the first one. I don't know, I would imagine it's kind of the same sort of a thing, but now they're in Europe.
Yeah, it seems like that was a movie that was a surprise hit and it was kind of a low budget film. It was an under the radar kind of thing. And when that happens, and suddenly there's a sequel, it's like, well, what do we do now? We just do more of the same thing. And that was like with Paul Blart.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it just gets bigger and more elaborate doing the same kind of thing. So I thought the first Pitch Perfect was fun. I hope they don't ruin it by now having it to, you know, now that it's a sensation, they have to please the fans that didn't exist before. But that seems to be the case.
Well, it was really funny. You give a thumbs up and thumbs down, like kind of reasons why you think it's going to be good and then reasons why you think it's not going to be in the current Las Vegas Weekly. And you said, are you ready to hear Cups 4 million more times on the radio over the next 6 months?
Yeah,
that song did drive you nuts.
It's a catchy song. But I have no idea if it's even in the new movie, but I can't imagine it wouldn't be.
There'll be some sort of an equivalent of her, like, I don't know, maybe now she's on to mugs. We don't know yet.
There you go.
So, and I am most excited about Ted 2 because I am one of those people who thought Ted the first, and I went opening weekend, so I hadn't heard all of the crazy buzz that happened afterwards. And I laughed from beginning to end in Ted. I know that a lot of people, you either loved it or hated it. There was no middle ground on that movie. I have, what have you heard about Ted 2?
I mean, I saw some footage at CinemaCon recently, and I'm not a fan. I didn't like the first Ted. I don't really like anything Seth MacFarlane does. Mm-hmm. So maybe you would have laughed at that footage. To me, it was more of this painful, lowbrow, really vulgar.
It is very vulgar,
unfunny,
humor,
stoner humor, and I mean, at least there is a different. It's unlike Pitch Perfect and Paul Blart. It doesn't seem to be recycling the same plot again. They have a whole new idea: the idea of Ted fighting in court to be recognized as a person because he wants to have a child with his wife. I'm sure it'll be some sort of clumsy social commentary related to gay marriage maybe or something like that, but at least they're trying to move Ted forward, so
that's
I'll have
good
to give
they're not just rehashing the same
thing.
Now there's been a lot of buzz about it, and I'm actually not sure where it's gonna go, but I just know that I would love to see the bodies again. Magic Mike. Triple XL.
Right.
I mean, double XL. Yeah.
Yes. Well, triple XL will be the next
exactly.
one.
Exactly. So have you seen anything about that?
Again, I saw a tiny bit of footage at CinemaCon. It seems to be Magic Mike was another surprise hit, and I think they're just trying to do more of the same.
I'm usually a Steven Soderbergh fan.
Well, Steven Soderbergh did not direct this film.
And I read that when you said that. So that's what was surprising. But I do have to say is that it was kind of, as a woman, I guess, going into Magic Mike, we thought it was going to be a different movie than a Steven Soderbergh movie.
Right.
You know, like we didn't expect the heaviness. And I really am a huge fan of Soderbergh. So, I mean, I appreciated it. But I kind of felt like it was two different movies. You had the kind of a movie where as a woman, you're just like, you know, oh, there's the hot guy stripping,
right.
You know, the kind of total reversal of, you know, what is typical of the, it's kind of like ladies' night to go out drinking and go see Magic Mike. And then you had this very heavy, heavy storyline.
Yeah, there was some real drama going on in that
movie. I kind of felt like it was two different movies, like, because it was hard to just really just be like, woohoo, about all the dance scenes when you've got people, you know, ODing and stealing and, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
And I think this movie is going to be more about the woohooing and less about the drama. I mean, that was what people were most attracted to in the first movie. And Channing Tatum is kind of the driving force behind it. I know he's the co-writer on this one.
Oh, okay.
And a producer. And I have a feeling that they're kind of pushing, certainly the preview footage was really pushing that angle and the kind of tongue-in-cheek humor over any serious drama.
Right.
That's not to say that there won't be some. And Soderbergh is still involved as the editor and cinematographer, but he's not the director. And I think Channing Tatum is probably more the driving force behind this movie than Soderbergh.
Well, as a woman who enjoys seeing him dancing and undressing, I think I'm going to give that a thumbs up.
Yeah.
So now it seems like we have had the Entourage movie coming for 50 years. And I know that, I mean, literally, I feel like that there's always in my entire lifetime been an Entourage movie. One, what took so long? Two, is there a point to doing it?
I mean, I think what took so long is that HBO just kept renewing the show. And so instead of ending the show and doing the movie, they kept doing more episodes and they kept saying, well, we'll do a movie when the show ends. But it didn't end until not that long ago. I think
it was like 4 or 5 years ago.
No, I don't know
really?
If it was that long.
Really?
It ran for 8 seasons.
Yeah.
So I think that was mainly what took the longest time. But no, I mean, I was never a fan of Entourage, but it's certainly not the kind of thing that you feel like, well, there's a bunch of dangling storylines or things to wrap up. It's not Lost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Can we have a Lost movie that just explains everything really what happened in Lost? But that's okay. But so I guess I kind of just stopped. Yeah, I mean, I loved Entourage, but I just kind of was like, I kind of stopped caring.
Yeah, I mean, I never started caring, but I think that's true for a lot of people. This movie does seem to be redundant, and the way they're advertising it is just that it's stuffed with celebrity cameos. Like, if we put enough celebrities in this movie, then people will go see it. But I don't anticipate a large box office for the Entourage movie, but I could be wrong.
Now, we also have a trend that I noticed in reading the story was that there's a lot of remakes going on. Going back to Cinderella, like we were talking about beforehand, you have Mad Max, you have Poltergeist. I mean, for me, why on earth would you redo Poltergeist? That movie haunts my childhood. I'm not sure I understand. It was such a perfect.
Well, I mean, if it's basically anything that's a brand name that people are familiar with, studios will want to trot out again. So even though it was 30 years ago, if people have in their mind, oh, that was a thing.
Oh, I mean, it happened before I was born. I saw it when it came out on Blu-ray.
Right. Or it was more than 30. It was like 1982, I think.
I don't know. I wasn't around then.
Sure.
But
it's the same with something like Vacation, which is even a little older, I think, than Poltergeist. But if people remember that in their minds, oh, that was a thing, then they'll do it again. It's why do we bring back The Terminator? Why do we bring back Jurassic Park? Why do we bring back Mad Max again?
Yeah.
All of that stuff is just studios are so reliant on the idea that if anything is familiar, people will go see it, even if it's something that,
has that shown, I mean, in the past, like there was the new Freddy Krueger, there was the new, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, kind of like, especially with horror movies, they get redone a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, have they been successful that there is a pattern to want to redo them?
Yeah, well, I mean, with those horror movies, especially, the budgets are usually fairly low, so there's less of a risk. It's not like The Terminator or Mad Max that they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on. And some of them have, there's another Texas Chainsaw movie coming, not this summer, but sometime later this year, I believe.
Wow.
So, in a lot of cases, those horror movies do, if they can trade on enough little name recognition and then maybe get some word of mouth going beyond that from people who are too young to have seen those movies in the first place. If it wasn't working, I think they would maybe stop doing it. Maybe not. Maybe they're just lazy and it's just they don't want to come up with new ideas. But this does seem to be what these studios really are focused on. And those horror movies especially, I'm sure that Poltergeist remake wasn't a hugely costly endeavor.
Yeah. But in the clips that I did see with the guy with the face falling off and stuff like that, I saw a couple clips here or there that it just seemed like it was completely just kind of redoing it, only doing it with just obviously exciting special effects, whatever. But it was that little girl, the little blonde girl, they're here, little Heather O'Rourke, kind of something that I was kind of like, I feel like you shouldn't mess with it, but
right.
I guess time will tell. Now, we only have a few more minutes. So what is a movie that you are really excited to see this summer?
That is a difficult question to answer. I'm kind of excited. We talked about Lost for a second, and Tomorrowland, which is co-written by Damon Lindelof, who was
George Clooney,
co-creator of Lost, and it stars George Clooney, directed by Brad Bird, who directed The Incredibles and the last Mission Impossible movie, not the new Mission Impossible movie that's coming up. But I think Brad Bird has a really good sense of fun and excitement when it comes to these big action-y type films, genre films. I did like Lost, and so I think Lindelof has a lot of
creativity. I liked Lost, too. I didn't like the way it ended.
Right.
It had me up until the last episode.
We'll see how the movie ends. But I also like that the name is from the area in Disneyland, but it doesn't really have anything to do with that. It's an original property. It's an original idea. George Clooney's always entertaining to watch. So I think in this summer that's full of these remakes and sequels and just things based on other things, that it looks new and fresh, but it still has the action and the special effects and all that stuff going on. going for it too.
Now, what is a film that other than Ted 2 that you are just your thoughts are really, come on?
Well, I mean, I think Pixels, the Adam Sandler film.
What has happened to Adam Sandler?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I never liked Adam Sandler, but I think he's just really lazy. And I will say, at least Pixels is a different kind of movie for him. I mean, he's done so many of these.
It's the same thing.
Lazy comedies where he just goes on vacation somewhere and brings his friends. And at least this has the special effects and the action, but it's still a bunch of Sandler friends with Kevin James and some of those other people. So I'm really not looking forward to that. And they made it, if you go online and look for Pixels, the short film, it's a 2-minute short film, no dialogue, no stars or anything. It's just a clever little fun thing with these video game characters attacking. And to take that and to turn it into this giant feature film.
2 minutes to 2 hours, yeah.
I don't think that's going to work at all.
Now, we talked a little bit about, obviously, the Scientology movies. So speaking of that, Tom Cruise, I mean, do you think that Mission Impossible still has legs? Do you think that he's still... can get a blockbuster out of this?
I hope so. I mean, I think the Mission Impossible series has been pretty solid, and one of the reasons is because they've gotten these really talented, distinctive directors for each of the installments, Brad Bird, but also John Woo and Brian De Palma, J.J. Abrams. And so for this one, I'm a little skeptical. Christopher McQuarrie is the director this time, who directed Jack Reacher with Tom Cruise, which I didn't think was that great. But the track record is good, I will say. I enjoyed all the previous ones as far as action blockbusters go, and they do the crazy stunts. They had the Burj Khalifa building in the last one, and there's some new thing where he's hanging on the side of an airplane in this one. So as far as those movies go, I think this could be a good one.
Now, we only have about a minute left. Is there a movie, an indie movie or something, a hidden sleeper that people don't know about that you should check out either on iTunes or Netflix or wherever that was a good film?
Oh, that's out now?
Yeah, or was out in the last few months that someone should see?
Geez, okay. Well, now I didn't prepare to talk about that. You know what? I really liked It Follows, which is not, I don't think, available on VOD yet.
I've heard that, yes.
It's still in a couple theaters here, but it's a small horror film.
So look out.
Really unsettling. It'll probably be out on home video soon, and that's a really good movie.
I liked Bloodline on Netflix.
I did not.
Okay. Well, again, we have such different opinions. Well, thank you so much. And thanks for being the best co-host guest on my first solo mission here on Cats at the Dish. We miss you, Johnny Katz. And next week, he will be back in the studio. So thank you, Josh Bell. Please go to his blog, Josh Bell Hates Everything. And again, you can see his cover story on the Las Vegas Weekly about summer movie previews. Thanks for coming. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me. We love Las Vegas.